Jones and Mike. Real radio for real people who are real enough to realize they really still have a few things to figure out. Jones is a hockey-playing, city-living, vegan bachelor who practices transcendental meditation when he's not biking to shows and Cub games. Mike's a beer-swilling married father of four from suburbia. His motorcycling, marathoning, and martial arts are pretty much on the shelf while he limos children all over town to their activities for the next decade.
Sound familiar?
It's, you know, shit dudes say. About family, women, philosophy, politics, history, people, money, pop culture, kids, fighting, business, life. Join the conversation. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike. 24/7 worldwide at jonesandmike.com.
This hour is the big game. A wonderful holiday for friends and family, or a perfect reminder that most of us are far from being free.
This is Jones and Mike.
Jones and Mike.
Jones and Mike. Jones, you feel like a slave because we did the Super Bowl thing. Do you ever feel like you shouldn't watch the Super Bowl? Like it's just what's expected of you as an American? Do you feel like it would be un-American to not watch the big game?
No, I don't think of it in terms of being un-American, but I do think that the people who know me and are close to me, If I had said, you know, I was tired, I had a long weekend, I really wasn't into either of the two teams, I just took a pass. I feel like among my friends, I'm kind of the go-to, so what did you think about that game guy? And in that regard, yes, I do feel like, not a slave, but I do feel like I need to do this.
Oh, it's like an obligation thing for you. Like, people are going to be expecting you to say what you thought of the commercials or the game or Peyton Manning or whatever.
Yes, but it doesn't feel like a burden.
Oh, all right.
It's almost like raising a child.
Okay. How is it like raising a child?
No, it just doesn't. It's an obligation.
It's a labor of love.
But it's not a burden.
Yeah.
So it's not for me to watch sports and have an opinion on it and share it with people who want to know my opinion.
Yeah, and there are people clamoring to hear your opinion, are there?
Even during the game, there were texts going back and forth among friends, and then somehow the topic of the Illuminati came up.
What?
And then
I jokingly
said, I'm out. And then one of the participants in the group text said, I want to talk more about sports with Jones. Let's talk about sports and get him back in again.
And this was a dude.
Yeah.
So dudes look to you to hear what you'll think of. What did you think of that call? Or what did you think of that all-seeing eye that was on Bay's, you know, right fanny?
No, it's mainly
during
sport.
The halftime
I think
celebration.
I think people like to hear my opinions, but...
Wow.
I do.
That's crazy.
Well, no, it's not like I'm a rock star. Like, they don't know what to think until I say it. But I think they know that when I say something, like if I have an opinion on something, if I said I want my dream car would be a 1987 Porsche 911.
Yeah.
People who know me know I know exactly why I want that car. And I think some people who know me and like me dig that I would know exactly why.
Yeah.
I wouldn't just look at a game and just go, oh man, they just stunk today. I'd have a reason why I thought a team stunk.
Okay.
And I think people dig that.
Okay. So as I watch the Super Bowl, we go to the party. We both went to the same party this year.
Yes.
Not the first time that's happened.
No, but this one went much better than the last time we went to a Super Bowl party.
Really? What happened? I don't
remember. There was that dude. That was another Peyton Manning Super Bowl. When Peyton threw that interception at the end. And you and I were kind of just mockingly rooting for the Saints with these kids.
Yeah.
And like their father got upset with us and like left before the game. And he was upset, but he was mad at us.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Just
that's
a complete
right.
creep show. So this Super Bowl party went much better.
He did. He had blue veins bulging from his forehead.
Yeah, and the kids the kids were like rooting for the Colts. We were rooting for the Saints. And the kids were loving us, giving them a hard time and playing around with them.
Wait a second. Wasn't that the Colts and the Saints? There's no way.
Yeah, it was. It was the Colts and the Saints.
So
Peyton Manning threw that interception.
No.
Yes, it is. That's exactly it.
Really? So Peyton has been in four Super Bowls?
Yeah.
Really?
Four Super Bowls, won two.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I remember that Saints victory, and I remember razzing those kids just playfully. And I remember that dude
was before
creepy.
Yeah.
Right. He left with 4 minutes left in a totally
tight game. Come on, let's go.
Game.
Let's go.
Yeah.
And the kids are like, but dude. And he's like, no, let's go.
Meanwhile, he doesn't even know that I don't even remember like what team that they were playing.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was the last time you and I watched the Super Bowl together. It didn't break bad, but it broke weird. This time it was good.
Interesting. Yeah. This was a totally chill event. But as I'm like, I hardly ever have a rooting interest. Thanks, Verge. Thanks, George. Thanks, Michael McCaskey. Thanks, guys. I hardly ever have a rooting interest in the Super Bowl. I hardly ever care. Unless some team is playing the Packers, I usually don't even care about the Super Bowl.
See, I can usually gin up a particular rooting side. I didn't really this year.
Yeah, I was literally like, yeah, if Cam wins, I dig Cam. I dig Ron Rivera. I dig the Panthers. They're D, Peanut, everything. If Peyton Manning wins, I dig that he went out.
Yeah,
even though you've now pointed out ad nauseum how mediocre he is in big games, especially in the big game.
Yeah.
Pedestrian.
One touchdown in 2 Super Bowl wins.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And as much as everyone hates Rex Grossman in this town, he had a better passing day in terms of attempts, completions, and yardage in the Super Bowl that we lost than Peyton did today when he won his second
Super Bowl. Well, and I'll still go back to the 2006 Super Bowl and say...
2007?
That's the 2006, 2007 right. season.
Right.
Sorry. Thank you for correcting me. Son of a bitch.
I know, but if other people are listening...
It's a big if. I still go back to that, and I say, if they just even had Kyle Orton that day, they probably win. They literally just needed a game manager that day, somebody to hand off, and every now and then, you got to have a third down and four, completion. You got to keep the ball going down the field. That's all you needed that day. I know it was raining. I know it wasn't a quarterback's day, but come on.
Yeah, no, it was rough.
Rexy lost that Super Bowl. And you're saying that his stats better than Peyton Manning's
at least
in the Super Bowl.
In terms of completions, attempts, yardage, yes.
Oh, my God, that makes me ill.
I know. It's disgusting.
So when I'm at these Super Bowl parties, I sit there and I'm like, why am I here? I mean, it's cool to commiserate with friends and family and all of that, but it literally has become a part of the fabric of Americana. You're almost un-American. I don't even know what it's like because I have never even entertained the notion of like not going out for the Super Bowl or being part of some celebratory atmosphere. But it feels like it's obligatory. You have to. It's like it's a holiday. It's like Easter and Christmas and Christmas Eve and Thanksgiving, Super Bowl. It's one of those mandatory participation holidays. Meanwhile, the whole thing is built around the excess of the day, not only from a food perspective, but from a, we don't even care about the game, but these are the commercials.
And see, that's what I liked about this party today. And I even commented to you. I said, dude, I like this crowd. I'm like, no one has commented on a commercial yet. Later, there was one woman who commented about one commercial, but that was it. So that was, and I went there, and everyone was wearing football jerseys.
Yeah, that was shocking. Yeah, the host George, the host had a Warren Moon jersey on, pretty rad.
Yes,
but yeah, normally it's we're all tied up on the $5 million commercials and all of that stuff, and it gets me thinking like, this is like such an emblematic holiday for America. Is this really all that America is? This excess of, and again, there's family, there's togetherness, there's friends, there's all of that, but most of the holiday is focused on the commercialization of the Super Bowl. The money that goes into it, the over and under on what the first commercial is going to be after the coin toss. This year, the odds-on favorite was Budweiser, if you must know, followed by Doritos, LG Electronics. They were all, like, I read, like, the Bowdog or the Sure Dog or the whoever the hell dog put out the odds on what the commercials were going to be after the coin toss and what the over and under was going to be on whether Lady Gaga would go over and under a certain time limit on the national anthem. Like, there's just a monetization of it that kind of makes me kind of queasy. And I'm glad that we went to a party where that wasn't the case. But most of the time, it is like, shh. Dude, was it last year that you were like in a commercial that was in the running for the Super Bowl? Was it last year or two years ago?
I did a commercial. A friend wanted to film, and he did film a Doritos commercial. When they did that, they had that Doritos contest, like amateur people could send in their videos, and it was total crap contest because you see the videos that won, and they were obviously done by studios.
Oh, God.
Well, no, it was the one. The
seriously?
One, well, the one winner was the one.
Yours was good.
Our video was good. It was a great amateur Doritos commercial. But the one that won that year was the kid with the pig that can fly. Now, there was no way. That's a six-figure commercial.
The kid with the pig that could
fly. The guy's like, hey, Bobby, can I have some Doritos? Like, yeah, when pigs can fly. And the little kid who looks like the... It looks like from the Christmas Story.
Uh-huh. Peter
Ralphie
Billingsley.
The little Ralphie-looking kid goes off to the barn, and he builds this little rocket, and he hooks it up to the pig's back, and the pig goes. You still see the commercial still airs now, years later. But it was like a six-figure commercial, easily.
Yeah, so you got robbed.
Well, it's not a matter of rob, but they just weren't being... I mean, that's not honest. That's not... put up like... A fan, like just an amateur's commercial.
You're right. It was open to the public, and a lot of ad agencies went, huh, well, let's look at the terms here. And they snuck in order to build up their portfolio and win. So, yeah, I dig what you're saying. And you were part of a consortium of just dudes.
Yeah.
Who, like, literally went out and did, like, a take on a zombie B movie, right?
Yeah,
right?
I didn't write it. I was only asked to be in it.
You were, like, the handsome debonair.
I was the main character in
main
it.
Main character running away from the zombies who wanted your Doritos.
Yes, yeah.
Dude, is that on YouTube somewhere? Can we see that?
You know, that's a good...
I don't know.
I mean, I know it was online for a while. Because I'll have to look it up like during the break or something.
All right. Well, let's find that. And if we can find that, let's put it up on the show page at jonesandmike.com. I'm curious, the Super Bowl aside, is America just built on this ideal of commercialization and capitalism and all of these concepts and constructs? I thought of all of this nonsense when I was watching the movie Easy Rider the other night. Have you seen Easy Rider?
I have not.
You haven't? Now, I haven't seen the beginning. We're going to have to watch it together. It's Jones and Mike.
When it comes to finding a holistic doctor near you, where can you turn for help? When you need a cancer doctor who will advocate for a non-surgical, non-chemical course of treatment, where can you find her? When you need a chiropractor or acupuncturist, when you need help with ailments that many doctors and even hospitals just plain turn away, like Lyme disease, who can help you with natural solutions and strategies for diabetes? When you need help to find an integrative, functional, complementary, alternative approach, option, and practitioner, the Health Freedom Network is there. Since 2009, the Health Freedom Network has been a leading resource for natural medicine and health information and research. Now we're also your best resource to give you access to the top docs in a number of specialties, from cancer to stroke, and in modalities from chiropractic to dentistry. The Health Freedom Network's directory at healthfreedomnetwork.com. Better information for better choices. Find your new health practitioner at www.healthfreedomnetwork.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
Jones and Mike. I know these guys don't have crossover appeal, but I really wish in this, their final year of playing shows, I wish that Black Sabbath would have gotten the nod to do the Super Bowl. Could you imagine? Like, what says football more? Coldplay or these guys? Black Sabbath.
Modern football? Coldplay.
Gah! Come on.
No, I mean, it totally does.
This,
totally does.
No, when you're talking about giving yourself brain damage...
I know, but they don't talk about that.
This says CET right here, Black Sabbath. It's 12 minutes. You have 12 minutes to fill. Most people will be like, well, what's Black Sabbath? They can fill 12 minutes, and they bring out a couple of modern stars to help sing Iron Mad and stuff, and it would be great.
I agree with you. I agree with you, but the NFL, as best as it can try to pull off, is a very lily white organization. And Coldplay, the league is now the type of league where a Coldplay fits in.
Yeah. Well, I didn't think they did poorly at all. I didn't see the whole show, but you only have 12 minutes, so it's like you have to really, really suck to not pull it off, I think, with all of the modern. It's not like it's just a band up there playing for 12 minutes. It's like such a show now.
Yeah.
Like I
enjoyed this one.
Yeah, yeah. And it looks like it probably cost $10 million to put that show on. Doesn't it look like a crazy amount of money?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Well, maybe not, because you're not paying the artists.
Allegedly. Yeah, allegedly, like that's the thing, that you just they get such a bounce from sales-wise. That
they'll do it for free, and now the NFL gets a part of that.
Oh, they get a chunk, really?
Yeah. Oh, now from after it was originally with Bruno Mars.
Yeah,
that was the one where that really kind of, I don't want to say launched him, because he obviously, if you don't need to be launched if you get a Super Bowl halftime show, but he did that show, and then the next day people were really buzzing about his performance, and that was a huge bump in his career.
Yeah,
because it really kind of, yeah, he was awesome, and it really kind of put him out center stage. And then from that point forward, the league announced, like, hey, wait a minute, we're really putting these people front and center. Then if they announce a tour 2 months later, you know, they've had that much attention to them. America was watching them. So there's some, they get a cut of whatever they make over like a 3 month period or 6 month period. Hmm. There's some kind of agreement now. So it started with Katy Perry.
And so, and now we're getting a little bit off track, but let's just stay on this for 1 second.
Just one.
I was seeing, okay, so CBS did a Super Bowl halftime shows through the years, retrospective, like 1 or 2 hour special the other night.
Okay.
And they, you know, went all the way back to the first big extravaganza of this type, where it was a major pop star, and it was Michael Jackson in like 1994, I want to say.
Okay.
And it was sponsored by Pepsi. Up until then, it was, they had shows, but it was kind of marching bands.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then they also had like We Is the People or some, like they did it like
Hooray
four
for
times.
Everybody.
Hooray
yeah.
for the People
yeah.
or something. And like they were like a real like troupe of
right.
like, you know, uber positive like hippie dudes and chicks that like went around and did like fundraisers around the country.
Right, yes.
And like so they did their dancing and singing extravaganza, like, but it was cheese ball stuff. And then Michael Jackson like jumped out of the scoreboard at the Super Bowl in 1994, and that changed everything. And the reason why they did that, I guess, and this like really kind of made me sad, actually, the reason why the NFL did that was because the year before, Fox Network, the upstart Fox Network, promoted, probably for months, that they were doing a halftime show starring Living Color.
Okay.
And so the comedy troupe, whatever, you know, Jim Carrey and the Wayans brothers and all those guys, they did a countdown and the whole thing. And then, like, you were supposed to turn away from the Super Bowl to In Living Color's halftime show and then tune back. But what the ratings showed was that nobody tuned back to the Super Bowl. Like, Fox hijacked the Super Bowl that year.
Really? I don't remember that. I didn't know that.
So these, you know, empty-headed white bread empty suits running the NFL then went, oh my god, oh, this is our big thing, we can't have these guys over at Fox stealing our audience, we have to come out with something better next year. So they had to be like forced into creativity, they had to be forced into awesomeness, basically. Meanwhile, I would argue that the Super Bowl halftime show is what has made the NFL of today.
Yeah. Oh, I would agree. I think
that's crossover appeal has brought in families and moms and children and all
yes.
of that stuff, and made it an international and an Americana centerpiece for the whole year.
Yes, and that's why I said to you, and you said, "What's more, football?
Yeah,
Black Sabbath or Coldplay?" And I said, "This modern NFL, Coldplay.
No, and point well taken. Yeah. Point well taken. And it's weird to me, but it's like, wow, if they didn't have the halftime show of Coldplay, which people were like, oh, on both sides or whatever, and that debate is what spurs on the viewership, so it's very healthy for that business and that enterprise. If they wouldn't have had that that centerpiece for the last 25 years, would the NFL even be the $11 billion a year juggernaut that it is today?
No, most of, and I would say most, and maybe it's only 51%, but I would say most of what you see as the modern football monster now has nothing to do with football, has nothing to do with how much people love the game. There's the reason football is big is things outside of the game. It's the betting, doing squares at parties. Yeah. It's fantasy football. Fantasy football. People love their fantasy football teams more than they love real football teams.
I do.
But those are the things that are pulling people in. They've done a great job of marketing Sunday as being your day off. Sit down in front of the TV. And as they market it that way, advertisers love it. Because Budweiser, Coors Light, they're like, yeah, this is your day. Go out and get the 24-pack of, you know, the cool activated cans or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, that's why, and you know, I always used to be all day football and watch the pregame show. I don't even watch the pregame show or any of that stuff anymore because it's all just marketing, just crap.
Yeah, drivel.
So most of what really has juiced up the NFL over the last 15 years has nothing to do with football. And even today, we went to that Super Bowl party. Good crowd, a lot of fun. But you and I were number one and two at watching that game. And like, paying attention to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And not that the other people don't know football or
we're real
but
men.
It was more of a party. No.
We're super men.
We say it every week, and every week we get it right, so.
Well, and so, I'll put a bow on it. I'm looking at this show, and I'm thinking like, oh my God, so you people, now I get it wasn't an $11 billion, golden egg back then, but it was like, it was the main focus for hundreds, maybe thousands of people in this world back then. And every year they had this centerpiece crown jewel event and they went like, yeah, cool. We have a marching band from Stanford come out. And then we have the We Is the People or whatever they were called.
Right.
They come out and this is cool. This is cool, man. Awesome. Great job. High fives all around. Well, all around the conference table. They had to be forced into, talk about falling forward, they had to be forced into coming up with the creativity that was needed to make an $11 billion annual biller. Someone else had to like force them into it, almost at gunpoint. Like, oh, if you guys are going to continue to suck, no problem, man. We're going to put these two black guys and this white guy out on a stage. We're going to steal your audience. Idiots. Idiots. It made me kind of sad. Like, oh my God, this is your job.
Yeah, but that may be the first example of a modern audience. Because until then, you know, Monday night baseball used to do big numbers. You know, Monday Night Football was a huge network show, but it was the only thing out there for dudes to watch on a given night.
Yeah.
When Fox, you're telling me that they hijacked the Super Bowl, that was probably your first example of, you know, people really seeing like any kind of multimedia, even though it was the same medium.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden you saw like something, oh wow, interest can be splintered. Before, television just, it was, you committed, you, if you were going to watch a sitcom, you sit down for 30 minutes and you watch that show.
Yeah.
Now people sit down, they'll watch a 30-minute sitcom. They'll be texting on one line with one hand and have their laptop open in the other. That's the norm, that you have so many things that compete now.
It's the multi-screen experience.
Yes.
And so on the one hand, I sit there with my multi-screens and I go like, oh my God, this is so awesome. Like, this is the greatest time ever to be alive. I am so happy that I'm me. I say that most of the time. And then there are other times I reflect on it and I go like, are these devices, is this life I'm living, is this what I'm here to do. Like, what is this? What is this? Is all of this technology, to quote Ali G, the great Ali G, is all of this technology, is this making me happier or sadder? Like, sometimes I'm not sure, right? Like, the constant connectivity, the constant chase for all of the nonsense, right? So I'm watching over the weekend, when I'm not watching Super Bowl prep shows, like the greatest commercials of all time and the greatest halftime shows of all time, I watched Easy Rider. And you have not seen Easy Rider.
I have not.
Man, oh man, I don't think I've seen the beginning of Easy Rider, which is insane to me, because I've seen this movie like 20 times or more. But apparently at the beginning of this movie, Peter Fonda and Dennis Hopper, these two hippies, they pull off like a drug run where they smuggle drugs from Mexico over the border and then sell them to like the man who is like played by Phil Spector in a Rolls Royce. I had to read this because I was like, I don't think I've ever seen the beginning of this movie. Whenever I pick it up, they're just like kind of doing a cross country jag where they're kind of just on adventures and hijinks. So, but you're familiar with the basic premise,
yes,
of Easy Rider?
I am.
Okay. Along the way, they pick up an ACLU attorney played by Jack Nicholson. And the whole movie ends horror show for all of them. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert if you, over the last three decades, haven't seen Easy Rider. But along the way, Jack Nicholson is like, so every night, they don't like stay in motels. They're like on motorcycles, and then they sleep like under the stars. So it's pretty rad. Just drugs, oh, great music, Jimi Hendrix, totally horrible cinematography. Apparently Dennis Hopper directed it. Enough said. But along the way, Jack Nicholson has this quote right before he's whacked, honestly, which is kind of sad, actually. But he says this.
This is romantic.
Yeah, they're all camping out. You Peter know, Fonda's stoking the embers.
This used to be a hell of a good country.
That's Nicholson.
I can't understand what's going on with it. Man, everybody got chicken. That's what happened.
That's Hopper.
Hey, we can't even get into like a second-rate hotel. I mean, a second-rate motel. You dig? They think we're gonna cut their throat or something. Man, I'm like, they're scared, man. Oh, they're not scared of you. They're scared of what you represent to them. And all we represent to them, man, is somebody who needs a haircut. Oh no. What you represent to them is freedom.
What the hell's wrong with freedom, man? That's what it's all about.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what it's all about, all right. But talking about it and being it, that's two different things. I mean, it's real hard to be free when you are bought and sold in the marketplace. Of course, don't ever tell anybody that they're not free, because then they're going to get real busy killing and maiming to prove to you that they are. Oh, yeah, they gonna talk to you and talk to you and talk to you about individual freedom. But they see a free individual, it's gonna scare them.
No, well, don't make them running scared.
No, it makes them dangerous.
Yeah, well, that freaked my mind right there when he said that, dude. Hopper's like, yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. And then Nicholson does his thing and... And then they all go to sleep, and then in the middle of the night, like, these toothless bastards, like, raid the camp with baseball bats and beat Nicholson to death. Beat him to death.
I feel like I don't need to see the movie now.
No. Literally the only part you need to see. And I'm sitting there, like, I'm like, and I'm not stoned. I wish I was, but I'm sitting there like, yeah, man, yeah. Freedom, man. It's hard to be free when you're bought and sold in the marketplace, like we all are. That was like a Bodhisattva quote for me. The Metal Coffins quote from Point Break. Did that speak to your soul, Jones? After you sat through all the commercials of the Super Bowl, you sumbish?
I'd almost have to see the whole movie to really get struck by that.
Yeah.
Just to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, it was, I'm sitting there and I'm like, yeah, man, okay, so these two dudes are riding around on motorcycles, and like, again, the scenes leading up to that, they go into these small towns, and like, the sheriffs are all hassling them, and all these toothless yokels, you know, like, America, us, regular dudes who go to work, we hate them at first sight. We hate them. And but the girls in town are kind of like, whoa, what's this? Who are these rebels on motorcycles? And it's like, you know, there were a bunch of movies about like motorcycle gangs in the 60s and in the 70s leading up to this movie. It's how Peter Fonda became a star, actually, was right. Being in those rebel motorcycle movies. So he was like natural for this role. In that way. So, but at any rate, so the whole movie is about how these dudes are just kind of just doing their own thing, saying to hell with society, to hell with the norm, to hell with the Super Bowl parties and the commercials and all that. Whatever you people are doing, we're totally not doing that. We're going to do this totally different thing. And then they pick up the ACLU lawyer in Nicholson, and he's like, yeah, dude, you guys represent the thing that scares people. Everyone thinks that they're free. But every morning they get up and they get into their metal coffin, they go to work, they work for someone else's, you know, vision and dreams and all of that. And then they come home at night to their house where they've got to continue to pay a bank for it. And they've got to pay all these corporations just to live there. And they're basically living in this whole indentured servitude system. And they don't even realize that they're trapped in this box. So, you know, and he's not saying all of that, but he's saying it way better and more pithy. But it's essentially what he's saying. And you guys represent, you guys sleep under the stars. You do your own thing. You crap in a hole. You sleep wherever. And people are frightened by that. They don't understand it. It confuses them and it frightens them. And they're going to kill you. And it was foreshadowing because at the end, those two get whacked.
Right.
And it made me think, like, ah, jeez. I'm sitting here in this bank-owned house watching, you know, the cable provided to me by Wide Open West, this corporation, and they're delivering this movie to me. And the movie was panned, you know, by many back in the day when it was released, because, like, old establishment Hollywood didn't understand it. Henry Fonda, Peter Fonda's dad, he literally didn't understand the movie at all. Like, it didn't even make sense to him. It didn't even make sense of, and I'm assuming he wasn't a stupid man, but like, it didn't even like resonate with that generation at all. And now I'm watching it, I'm like, yeah, man, I'm not even stoned. And I'm like, yeah, this is a box of my own creation that I'm living in.
Right. The only thing that I would, the only thing that I have a struggle with when I hear this, you know, kind of break south of the norm, live under the stars, don't live in the box. I haven't seen that pattern of people who have really done that long term. You know, and like, this movie came from a generation where there was that hippie culture. And then those exact same people became the corporate pig raiders of the 80s and just swallowed up everything whole.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was kind of funny to see that was a group of people that were like, free love, sleep out under the stars, ignore the rules. And then when they realized, like, okay, this is, you know, what is really out there for me if I continue to maintain this path, they didn't try to take some of that hippie experience and meld it into a 9-to-5 9-to-5 leave it to beaver lifestyle. No, they became like,
yeah,
cocaine sniffing,
that which they despise. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that to me is, that's where it kind of,
there's
pushes
a disconnect
me away.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's almost like what I would look for. This is kind of an odd comparison, but every once in a while you meet someone who maybe they were like this, all-American wrestler, or this like great like martial arts guy or whatever. And you can see the way they carry themselves. They don't get excited. They don't get their feathers ruffled. They kind of know they can handle themselves and they have nothing to prove. And they're very laid back and they can kind of carry that attitude throughout a number of areas of their life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I struggle when people put that idea forward, like, hey, man, just live in the now, only because I very rarely see any elements of society where those people either continued to live that way or brought some of that lifestyle into their own personal lifestyle and really created this reality that was appealing to me. The only thing I can think of is, I think it's Fremont, Iowa. I think. I'm just drawing a blank on it. Mm-hmm. But it's where there's this this Transcendental Meditation community.
Yeah.
And they like have their Transcendental Meditation temples out there, and they have like a Transcendental Meditation University. And that's the only, I've seen video of this place. And that's the only place where it's like a community where they live a normal life. People have houses and televisions, but they do the meditation twice a day. And that's the only time that I've ever seen an example of like modern America where I went, no, those are people who are attempting to make modern America work for them, or modern Western civilization work for them.
Yeah. And assimilate their ideals into the constructs of this country.
With the idea that it will be lasting.
How are you not on that TM community's mailing list?
I'm on their mailing list. I'm just drawing a blank on the name of the community.
No, but they'll send you invitations to like their like Jubilee or something. Like, come out. We're going to have like 1,000 people meditating at once, and it's going to be earth shattering and orgasmic.
I think it's, is it Fairfield, Iowa? I get invited to stuff like that. Definitely.
We have to go there. I think
I would
after Chet's, after the remote at Chet's in Justice, and right before we go to Nude City, Indiana, which has always been one of my premier destinations for rest and relaxation, we will go to the TM community in Iowa.
Yes, it is Fairfield, Iowa.
And it's like a commune?
No. That's the thing.
A community of it's TM just, people.
Yeah, and it's large. There's about 9,000 to 10,000 people that live out there.
Yeah,
and there's a Maharishi University of Management.
Awesome! I'm getting my MBA from that place.
They have MBAs from there. You can get your MBA from there.
Totally, it'll be about as worthless as my communications degree from Illinois State.
Well, see, you don't want to bring that. People don't want that attitude up.
They'll be like, we heard that podcast. You did. You can't come in.
Yes.
Interesting. Well, okay. So what you're saying, though, it's like, okay, I haven't seen it practiced, but so that's what's making me grapple with the message. And I dig that. The messengers that delivered that message 40 years ago maybe didn't live up to the lofty ideals they were practicing, but that shouldn't diminish
the message.
Yeah, what
no,
they were
no,
saying.
I agree with you.
And I mean, I don't want to sound like some sort of a pinko commie, you know, stoner here. But like that spoke to me, dude. That spoke to me, especially like, again, the next scene is Nicholson gets a baseball bat to the head, dead. And he wasn't even one of the two hippies, you know, that the people in the town wanted to kill. And then the last scene of the movie, like a little while later, like they go on this drug jag, and like which is crazy. And I don't even recommend you watch that scene. But then the end of the movie, like some yokels, like with a shotgun, pull up alongside of these two guys on their killer choppers and kill them right on the side of the road, out in the middle of bums, you know, F Louisiana or something. And it's kind of a downer. And then they roll credits, and it's like, that's it.
That's very heavy.
That's it. Yeah. Okay. All right. So that spoke to me. And so what you're saying is being practiced right now. Because as you were saying, like, I haven't really seen it in practice, I'm thinking, like, I don't even know if it's possible in modern America or modern world, modern planet Earth, to really, truly live independently and live free the way that, you know, movies like that and that generation that they were describing. But then, you know, just this week, I'm reading this article on Vice.com, which is entitled "Living Out of a Van is the New American Dream." Do you own a van, Jones?
I don't. I own a Toyota Avalon. a little less than a van.
Yeah, I don't think you could live out of an Avalon.
No, I wouldn't want to.
My dad, before he died, I guess he told my mom that he wanted to, like, buy a Winnebago and sell the house and just, like, drive around. Yeah. Yeah. And he was not that dude. So my mom, of course, vetoed that.
I think we're all that dude. It's just, are we willing to be that dude?
That's right. Jones and Mike.
I've been very happy with the fish oil that I've received. I trust that it's PCB, mercury-free, it's clean, it's wild-caught, and it's the best stuff that I found.
Chris is just one of thousands of satisfied Pacific Rim customers around the world and here in Chicago. You need omega-3s daily, but most of us here in Chicago do not get nearly enough of them from our diet. Even worse, if you're like me, you eat too much beef, and that drives up your omega-6s. Those are the omegas that lead to inflammation in your joints and in your arteries. As I like to say, omega-3s counteract the beef sandwiches. They lower cholesterol, reduce inflammation, joint and back pain, boost brain function and eyesight, improve circulation and performance, open your lungs, and give you a healthier heart. Why are you not getting all of these benefits from Pacific Rim Omegas? Try Pacific Rim for free. Just pay the shipping. This is an exclusive offer just for listeners of this radio station. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com and get your free trial of Pacific Rim. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
It's Jones and Mike. So my dad died in 2005. And between, I want to say between 1980 and 2005... he was either in his office at work or he was on the couch in my family's home. He was in one of those two places. I don't even think he slept in a bed. I think he was just in one of those two places at all times.
Is it, are you
25 years?
Okay, now are you
straight?
Are you serious that he didn't sleep in the bed?
No, I don't know, man. I cannot. If you gave me a Bible and told me to swear on it, I would not be able to swear that I had ever seen him in a bed during that 25-year period.
Because over the last few years now, I've met more and more people that just sleep in Lazy Boys and don't sleep in a bed.
Yeah, he may have. I don't know if he even slept.
I went to visit a friend once out of state, and I was just staying at their home, and my friend was in her parents' home at the time, and her parents didn't sleep in their bedroom. They slept like out in the center TV room on two Lazy Boys. So, and I was told that, like,
oh my
hey,
God.
So if you
side
go,
by side, like
yeah.
his and hers.
Yep. And they're like, hey, when you go, don't freak out when you go out. If you have to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night and you just see my parents laying there, that's
Jeez.
What they do.
Oh my
but
God.
I've heard that more and more. Where
oh
people,
my
yeah,
God.
I'm trying to think. I was just talking to someone this week, and they're like, "Oh yeah, yeah, the guy doesn't sleep in a bed anymore. He just sleeps in a Lazy Boy.
He sleeps literally upside down like a bat in
yeah.
one of those contraptions, those fitness contraptions.
Right, right. I always wanted to go on one of those.
Yeah,
it looked like it would just elongate your back. That'd have to feel so good.
Yeah, I don't know. The blood rushing to your head, like Mussolini style, doesn't look appealing. So when my dad was in his, what we now know to be his final years, he apparently had told my mom that he wanted to sell like the paid off house that he raised us in Orland Park on the south, you know, southwest suburban side of Chicago. He wanted to sell that house and buy a Winnebago. And those two were then going to commence driving around to various places heretofore undisclosed by him, but probably, you know, near bodies of water where he could fish, we can only presume. And my mom would, I guess, according to this grand plan, she was to dotingly, you know, fire up the Smoky Joe every night at their, you know, makeshift campground and cook him a steak and a boiled potato or something, and that's how they were going to spend the rest of their days. And my mom was just like, no, not gonna happen at all. And she tells this story now, you know, years later, and I'm like, what? How did this dude think he was going to do that? It doesn't even, it's not, it wasn't in his character. I can't even believe he brought it up. He must have been screwing with you. She swears up and down he wasn't screwing with her. Can you imagine living out of a Winnebago, Jones?
Not really.
I could. I could. Not I really. Absolutely could.
I don't know where I would base it. Because I see, for me, I don't freedom wouldn't be freedom of movement. That's not a big deal to me. So if you're saying like you would live out of a Winnebago and drive around and see stuff, maybe I could do that for a couple months. Maybe I could do it for a year, but I don't really have a huge, big burning desire to do it.
Maybe that's your like your summer home and you're like a snowbird and that's your you go and you drive around to warm places in your Winnebago, but then you have a home base. In some northern climate, for example, that's a home. That makes more sense to you?
No, I don't look at freedom. I don't look at freedom as movement. I look at it as just being able to do what you want to do. Like doing what we do right now for a living, even though it wouldn't be freedom in the sense that someone could give it to you, someone could take it away, someone could pay you a certain amount of money, and then once that contract's up, they could change the terms of the agreement or present you with a new contract. I still look at that and think that is where I would be most comfortable. Yeah. That's where I would be like most motivated and happy. So it would be just doing, and I like the idea of being in a city and like attached to something. Being attached to something is kind of cool to me because I think Chicago's a unique place. So that to me has greater appeal. Like my sister, what you're describing would probably appeal to my sister more. She lived in Japan for like a year and a half and she backpacked around Southeast Asia and then went to Australia and she's done all these trips.
Yeah.
I think it's cool and I guess I would like to have those experiences as anecdotal experiences for stories to tell other people. But not really driven enough to go, not really driven enough to go do it.
Yeah. So even your sister, though, and it's I'm going to ask you to speak for her. You know her pretty well, so I think we can do that. Speak for her for 1 second. Would all of those experiences, even if she was away from home for a year straight, would they have been as impactful if that was just her life, was just kind of moving from place to place? Or was having a home base important in that journey or to make that journey more impactful somehow? Even though she wasn't just going for a week or two or three, she was going for 6 months, a year, 18 months.
I think it was easier for her to enjoy it knowing she had something to come back to. Because when she first went to Japan, she freaked out and thought she made a mistake.
Well, but that's got to be like going to like Venus.
Oh, and I've I've gone to Japan to visit her. And if anyone's seen the opening scenes of what's the Bill Murray
Lost
movie?
In Translation.
Lost in Translation. When Bill Murray lands in Japan and he immediately goes, I got to get me on a plane. I got to get out of here. I felt that exact same way. The exact same way. When I landed in Tokyo, I would have, if you could have got me on a plane and got me the hell out of there, I would have done it. And I think it was I stepped on soil that was so different from anything that I ever knew, have known. It felt like literally another world. And you're on a flight forever. You're exhausted when you get there.
Yeah, you gotta be like disoriented.
Oh, and then, my sister picks me up from the airport and she's like going through the airport, like, or not airport, the train station down in like the central area of Tokyo, and where they have that, you've seen it on TV, where they have that 9-way intersection and there's just people and cars everywhere.
Yeah, you're nuts.
I'm up for 24 hours. It's raining. It's all neon down there. The place looks like Blade Runner. And my sister is speaking Japanese, like walking around. Like she literally was leading me by my hand like I was a little boy. And she's like walking through the crowd like, "Arigato gozaimasu, sumimasen." And I was like, oh my God, I don't know where I'm at. I am anchored to nothing. Get me out of here. And then I love Japan. After 24 hours, after I got a good night's sleep, then I was kind of like, okay, this is all right.
After you figured out how to work the toilet, you were like,
oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I do think it made the experience easier for her, knowing that she had something to go back to. For someone to be just completely untethered and just go, man, yeah. I don't know how many people really can do that.
Vice.com had an article this week entitled, Living Out of a Van is the New American Dream. It's about, this whole article is about Chris Trenchel and Tamara Murray. They thought they had the perfect life. They both had successful careers. The dude was a budget analyst for the city of San Francisco.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. Murray was a vice president of a PR firm. They got married. They bought a condo. They blew cash at cool, trendy places. But there was a problem. Quote, in a nutshell, Murray told me, or, you know, the article author, we were dead inside. We were
good
dead
Lord.
Inside, dude. So in order to support themselves, he said they had to work, they had to live a work first, everything else second lifestyle. So eventually, after years of this, they said, what are we doing? He says, we basically felt we were wasting our youth. Travel, learning about new cultures, meeting new people, having meaningful experiences, that's what's important to us. So they saved up money, quit their jobs, and they now they're part of what's called van dwelling. They live out of a van. Apparently, you can also do this in a car or a motorhome, and it's a lifestyle choice that, like, more millennials are choosing these days. And they you know, they look at their friends around them, and they're like, oh, my God. They're all swimming in this, you know, debt. This debt
right.
and servitude, indentured servitude that everyone, especially in prior, in these millennials, they've been fooled into thinking they have to go to college and you have to have $100,000 in debt when you get out of college. There's no other choice. There really is no other choice. So these two people, like, and many other people like them apparently, are looking around at their brethren and going like, oh, I don't want to be that. Sitting around working to pay off your college loans for the first 10 years of your working career? Screw that. I'm getting in a van and I'm motoring.
Right.
They're doing the Wally Noonan.
And I dig it.
Wally wanted to do it like right at exactly the moment in time when he wasn't going to be physically able to do it. So why not do that when you're, you know, 28
yeah.
rather than 68?
Absolutely. But the key to me, if you really have a message and you really have kind of cracked this code to get out of this matrix that we're living in, means that you started it at 28 and at 68, you're still doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only, actually I have heard of one guy who's done it. One guy who has done it. He does Steve Maxwell. That's his name. He does he does kettlebell training. Like, he sells these kettlebell DVDs and he's this big martial arts guy. He went through a divorce. He got rid of everything. And for years just lived out of a van.
Huh.
And or like, yeah, well, like a camper van. And then he eventually got rid of that. And now he lives a lifestyle where everything he has and everything he needs is in a backpack. And that's it. And he just cruises around and he goes, like, you would see him and you might know him. Like, he sells DVDs that are popular and well known. And he's been on shows. He does a lot of fitness shows. He would do like a lot of Rogan and a lot of these Joe Rogan and a lot of these like podcast stuff. But
right.
you would see him. He's been kind of out and about. Now he's like going on 60. So he's done it. So I guess I could think of one person who's done it, but I'd have to see, because the flip side of what you're saying is like, just go for it and don't worry about it. I can kind of speak to that because after my parents died, I sort of did that where I was like, I'm not chasing anything. I'm letting everything come to me. And it worked for a while where I was just kind of, I didn't worry about finding a job.
I thought you were selling crack.
And yeah. And then, but through that process, it was like, then I got this TV show, like all this weird stuff started to happen. And then it's another show of, you know, why it didn't really happen. But it's hard to have the stones to like to do that. And then you see other people where they're like, they're going for the job. They've got the insurance. They've got the pension.
Right.
They're driving the Jeep Cherokee.
So you see everybody else who's, you're outside the prison and you're like, oh, my God, look at how much fun they're having in that prison. And everyone expects me to go back inside the prison. I need to go back inside the prison.
Yeah.
It's essentially what you're saying.
Well, it's hard.
In a way. In a way. You're like, oh, everyone was getting promotions and buying Land Rovers and all of this stuff. And you were like, oh, I guess I'm expected to do that stuff, too. I should start doing that stuff.
Well, I mean, it's not easy, though, to like commit yourself to being outside of that and just going, I'll just make something happen.
Oh, I mean,
it's very difficult.
Totally. So no, even in this article, these two goofballs, like they have remote jobs and stuff, and they probably, you know, don't make a ton of dough, but they don't need a ton of dough.
Yeah.
But it is like, well, okay, so like I'm sitting here chasing all these jobs and, you know, clients and interviews and all this stuff. And it's like, why am I chasing these people? Why? Because I have all of these commitments that I have to satiate. If I didn't have all of those commitments to satiate, I wouldn't have to be talking to all of these douches.
Right.
So every time I pick up this phone, I'm like, is this a phone call I really want to make right now?
No. I can answer
for
you.
I have to make
it. It's not.
I have to.
Yes.
Why? And this is box I put myself in. I literally lifted it over myself and put, literally, I figuratively put it over myself. Stop it. I corrected myself.
You did.
We're going to fix that in post.
But that's always a big thing with you and I. We never let the literal
thing
go.
You did it mean literally.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I'm letting you go. Look, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks.
Go ahead.
These two people, so they work remotely, but they do give some interesting insights into van-dwelling life, which they say is not always glamorous. So they have plenty of stories about buying water jugs to pee in and showering at, like, you know, gyms. They'll sneak into gyms to shower. It does. It just starts to be like, oh, man, I don't even know if it's possible. You can't, like, homestead in, like, you know, in claim land in 2016 America. Like, maybe 100 years ago, you might have had a fighting shot at just doing this. Now, I don't know. It seems like it would be like, you know, like in Rambo, where he just wants to walk through a town. And Brian Denny, he's like, nuh-uh, not through my town.
Yeah.
Freak. Veteran freak. I'm going to hose you down with a high-powered hose on your bum. I don't think he said it quite like that.
No, he
but
didn't.
I'm trying to clean it up for a family show.
He didn't. It would actually be better had he said that.
It would have been a very short movie if he said lines that lame.
Yeah.
So at any rate, you know, I want to do the van dwelling thing. There's no way my old lady would do it.
No, you can't.
This wife will not do this. But my question to you is, will my second wife do this with me? This is what I want to do. And I want to do this in New Zealand.
Why New Zealand?
Well, just someplace that's really interesting to see. Maybe Washington State. Would that be a fair stand-in for New Zealand?
You can do whatever you want, I guess. I mean, I don't have a great drive to go see things. That's something other people seem to have.
Oh, I don't either. But this whole idea of, you own your own house. No, you don't. A bank owns it.
You're right. Yeah.
And I constantly tell my kids that, no. Actually, right now, Chase Bank owns it. I don't know who's going to own it in a few months. Banks sell my house all the time to each other. So they let me know, oh, now you need to pay me. We're the new landlords of that place. So it's great to get that little notification in the mail of which bank I need to pay that month. Okay, great. Okay, I got, for the next 24 years, maybe I'll have to pay you. Fabulous. But even beyond them, if you don't pay your taxes, the state will take your house. You never own your house, ultimately. Someone always owns it. So this idea of, like, whoa, home ownership, very important in America, a total scam. And it was years ago that we both were exposed to this concept and we both went, you're crazy.
Right.
You want to rent? No way. And I think this is before you became a person who accepts people's rent checks.
Yes. I still accept people's rent checks.
Yeah. So you back then were like, that's insane. The whole American dream is to own a home.
Right.
We both were like in that like kind of foggy haze.
Well, we've now, and I think you and I have both now learned that, you know, we've been taught over the years to just repeat things until they become reality. Innocent until proven guilty. American
right.
dream of owning a home.
Yeah.
We just repeat it. Like, of course you want to be a homeowner, even though you never own a home.
That's right.
Of course we live in a world where, a country where someone's innocence is presumed to be intact until their guilt is proven. But we know that's not a case. But the powers that be like to have us repeat that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we go around believing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so it doesn't sound like either one of us will ever be van dwellers.
No, I have no desire to do that.
I think like a kick-ass van. Like not a van, obviously, but like a Winnebago. Like a really one of those kick-ass ones that are like $250,000.
Yeah, I'm not saying I
would. Where the sides come out.
Yep.
They get like a gallon a mile.
Right. And I'm not saying I would never do it or that it would. I would kind of do it to that level. But it would never be a permanent way of life where, like, I cracked the code. So, you know, if I could live a life where I could kind of do whatever I wanted to do if it was something like this down in a basement, I wouldn't care what anybody else thought. That would be my version of cracking the code. Mm. Like, living outside the box, you know, of society and driving around town in a van, that... I don't know. That version of it doesn't appeal to me at all.
Yeah. What if you did this show while living in a van?
That would be good. I'd do that. I'd still have to live somewhere around here in the city. I could do this show on the road for like a year, but I really feel in order to do it well, I'd have to be attached to Chicago.
All right. So keep your joint.
Yeah,
and stay there. Like, what do you think? Like Memorial Day to Labor Day.
Well, no, I
all
like
the months when you can wear white, right?
Well, I like playing hockey in the winter and stuff.
Well, right, but you could do that. You could do that wherever. And then we jump in the Winnebagos, and we take this circus on the road.
I'd do it for 1 year. I could do it for 1 year, but I don't have a lasting wanderlust.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All right, well, let's do it for a year.
No, but I'm saying, like, to do it, like, for part of the year and then return to home base and then get grounded again with family and friends, la, 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 and then you go back on the road.
Let's get some dates together.
No. Oh, no. I got this albatross around my neck called a wife and 4 kids. I can't do this for, like, 15 years easy.
You did it to yourself.
I know. I literally put a box over myself.
It's disgusting.
I do. Let's see. 15, 2031. I get paroled in 2031.
You think you get paroled?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I got some news for you. You really own this house.
Do you want lower cholesterol, a healthier heart, open arteries, better breathing, relief from joint and back pain, better hair, skin, digestion, even eyesight, a stronger immune system, even a sharper mind, and better mood? What is this miracle drug, you ask? It's all natural and really not a drug at all. It's omega-3s. The essential fatty acids in omega-3s have been shown time and time again to reduce disease-causing inflammation throughout your body. Here's the thing. Omega-3s aren't made by your body. You have to eat them. Speaking of eating, did you know that an optimal balance of omega-6s to omega-3s is 2-1? Did you also know that your diet is likely giving you a ratio of omega-6s to omega-3s of as high as 20-1? To get in balance and reduce the inflammation in everything from your heart to your joints, you can either eat way more fish and way less beef, or you can get your omega-3s through us, Pacific Rim, the best source of omega-3s in the world, the wild-caught fish from the deep cold waters we use to make Pacific Rim Omegas. Here's what a few Pacific Rim customers have to say about our omega-3s.
I've been very happy with the fish oil that I've received. I trust that it's PCB, mercury-free, it's clean, it's wild-caught, and it's the best stuff that I found.
I was very impressed by taking the product and the purity of the pharmaceutical grade of the omega-3 fish oil. I really felt very, very good by taking the product. As far as my mood, I noticed the collagen, in my face, and some of the lines that have disappeared, my nails, my hair. I highly recommend this product, Sippy Rim. I really, really enjoy the product, and I look forward to purchasing more products in the future.
Pacific Rim Omegas are far better than store-bought brands because we use only the best sourced ingredients available. Third-party tested to ensure that our Omegas have none of the toxins like mercury that other store-bought brands have been shown to include. Pacific Rim also packs a super dose of the essential fatty acids EPA and DHA in our Omega-3s. When compared to most store-bought brands, no fishy aftertaste, a super dose of anti-inflammation Omega-3s, and a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's the Pacific Rim difference. Try our Omegas like thousands of people near you and around the world have, and feel the Pacific Rim difference for yourself. Take advantage of our reduced pricing now at www.mydailyomega.com and make Pacific Rim your daily Omega. Pacific Rim Omegas for healthier heart, lungs, arteries, joints, immunity, eyesight, digestion, mood, and more. Pacific Rim for health and happiness. Try it now and feel the Pacific Rim difference. Visit www.mydailyomega.com or call us toll free 877-324-4227.